8:07 now, and on the phone with us with a look at the backcountry, Nikki from Utah Avalanche Forecast Center. Good morning.
Good morning. So like you just said, partly cloudy today. It was pretty windy last night. Around 9 p.m., we had gusts up to 90 miles per hour. Things have died off, and it's gusting high at 11,000 feet, but not too bad. The wind should die throughout the day and then become easterly tonight, which will be a change for our snowpack. Saturday's dusting of new snow really helped the riding condition. The winds overnight could have moved around some of that soft snow, but improved riding conditions will still exist to where areas were protected from the wind. And there is a bit of good news. The extended models are saying that decent-looking snow will come this weekend. You know, this has happened a couple times, and it kind of seems like a pipe dream, but we're keeping our fingers crossed for Saturday. We've got two issues, that persistent weak layer and the wind-drifted snow. The main one is that poor snowpack structure that is kind of covering the entire Wasatch Range. It's that strong snow over the weak faceted snow. Primarily exists on shady slopes at mid and upper elevations, so that's west through north through east, where you can find that slab on top of that weak faceted snow. The likelihood of these avalanches is decreasing, but it's still not zero. We know that that's where the best coverage in the riding seems to be, but it's also where the highest avalanche danger is. So as soon as you choose to ride in that steep north-facing terrain, you're just sort of rolling the dice that you could trigger an avalanche 1 to 3 feet deep. So I'm just going to keep avoiding that steep terrain until the weak faceted snow is buried so deeply that it's no longer a problem, or it melts in the spring. We'll see which one comes first. The second issue is that wind-drifted snow. So like I said last night, the northwesterly winds were up to 90 miles per hour. While there wasn't a ton of new snow to move around, high winds are going to transport any snow that's available for transportation. With such high winds, we could also find wind-deposited snow on almost any aspect. So I'd expect to find sensitive slabs of wind-drifted snow at all upper elevation aspects, especially around like ridgelines, sub-ridges, and gullies. The winds have backed off this morning, but even a few high gusts throughout the day will allow these slabs to become more cohesive and firm and allow you to travel farther out onto them before they break. Also, if you do trigger an avalanche that initially fails in that wind-drifted snow, it could step down more deeply into that weak faceted snow that I talked about. The avalanche danger today is going to be moderate on all steep upper elevation slopes. The avalanche danger is also going to be moderate on steep mid-elevation slopes west through north through east. Assuming triggered avalanches are possible, especially if they have a denser slab of wind-drifted snow on top of that weak faceted snow. Any avalanche could be 1 to 3 feet deep and over 100 feet wide and could be triggered remotely and from lower angle terrain. All their aspects are going to have a low danger today.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with the Mountain Mediation Center, talk about some of their upcoming community conversation programming. Then U.S. Ski and Snowboard Update with Cross Country Communications Manager Tom Horks and Park City native Rosie Brennan, who's having her best season ever. Then the director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, Dana Jones, in with a monthly update. It's 8:11 now. Good morning. Well, after letting a contract extension expire on December 31st, the ski patrollers of Park City Mountain Resort have been working without a contract in place with Park City Mountain. The patrol union held a small rally at the base of the resort Saturday to raise awareness for their cause. KPCW's reporter Sean Higgins was there and has this report.
Although the Park City Professional Ski Patrollers Association hoped to have a new employment contract in place with Park City Mountain Resort before opening day this season, the union chose to sign an indefinite contract extension last November. The extension kept their old contract in place until a new agreement was reached or one side submitted a 20-day notice to terminate the contract. After negotiations stalled in December, the union members have been working without a contract since January 1st. A small group of union members held a rally at the main bus stop on Lowell Avenue in front of PCMR Saturday morning to raise awareness for their cause. A similar rally was held at Stevens Pass Resort in Washington State, which is another Vail Resort's property with a unionized ski patrol. Max McGill is the treasurer on the patrol union's executive board and is a member of the negotiating committee with PCMR. He says a perceived lack of urgency from PCMR to get a new contract in place prompted the union's decision to terminate the contract.
We found that we weren't being treated by the company as professionals and we weren't getting the appropriate level of responsiveness and urgency from them to get a contract done. So the union decided to let the contract expire. We certainly are disappointed that it's come to this. We really want the company and the union to succeed. And if we need to apply a little bit of public pressure to the company, we're willing to do that.
Miguel says the resort's patrollers are still working and getting paid, but are classified as working without. That means even though they still get paid, patrollers are without lockout protections and are not able to formally arbitrate grievances with PCMR. According to Miguel, the union is looking to keep the majority of their old contract in place, but are asking for access to sick time and a small raise, and are looking to renegotiate after the COVID-19 pandemic is over. Miguel says the negotiations have been painfully slow so far.
The company does not seem concerned with the timeliness of these negotiations. It oftentimes takes a long time for us to get proposals back from them, and they often come in the form of a rejection. We don't feel that we're asking for much. A lot of things we're just clarifying wording. We've only made three agreements so far on our contract after 5 months of bargaining.
The president of the patrol union, Joe Nonchik, added in a written statement, quote, Vail Resorts has a responsibility for the health and safety of its employees, its guests, and the communities in which it operates. So it's important that we're fairly paid for the risks we're taking by being first responders during a pandemic and that we have access to benefits such as paid sick leave. Also in a written statement to KPCW, PCMR said in part, quote, the issues raised by the union are very complex and do not lend themselves to quick resolution. Another reason why the union's unexpected termination of the contract seems very short-sighted and counterproductive. PCMR added that an upcoming bargaining date has been set for January 20th. Saturday's rally was not a work stoppage, and all patrollers who took part were on off days. Ski patrollers are not easily replaceable resort employees. In addition to being expert skiers, they also hold outdoor emergency care medical certifications and are trained avalanche professionals. Some patrollers can also hold higher medical certifications, like being an EMT. Miguel says the patrollers did speak with upper management Saturday morning, with both sides expressing disappointment in the current situation. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
Well, the Mountain Mediation Center has programmed a community conversation series. On the phone to tell us more, I have Miriam Garcia, the center's board chair, along with one of the center's volunteers, Haley Locke. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Miriam, let's start with you. The center is planning a series of 10 different community conversations. Who are they being programmed for?
So these are conversations that are going to be held in Spanish and English. And I think Hailey, she's one of our volunteers, and she has more information on that, on dates and times and who these are directed from. So Hailey, would you like to just give that information first?
Yeah, so we're doing two community conversations. So the first one being tomorrow, Tuesday, January 19th, from 6 to 7 p.m., and we're going to have two simultaneous conversations taking place, and one's in English and one's in Spanish, and community members can join based on their preferred language. And then we're going to be discussing experiences about community and what community means to people who live here. And the following Tuesday, on the 26th, both of those groups are going to come together and share their experiences and deepen the conversation. And this is all going to be taking place on Zoom. And our main goal of this two-part series is to build relationships among the members of the Latinx community and the non-Latinx members of our community. Let me see. We did used to do these community conversations in person, so we're trying to continue them in a safe way during these times. So it's all going to be on Zoom. And our goal is kind of to provide a safe space where everyone can be heard. And we're going to allow all participants to actively listen to others. And it's going to be facilitated by Mountain Mediation Center staff and volunteers who've all been trained and taken courses to prepare them for this.
Okay, so what's the interest so far? I mean, are you getting people to register?
Yeah, we are asking people to pre-register, and all the information can be found on Mountain Mediation Facebook page. And if anyone has any questions about registering, they can email mountainmediation.outreach@gmail.com.
So as you mentioned, I mean, one of the goals here is to build connections and bridge the gap between the Spanish and English speakers in our community. This has always been difficult, especially those for those who may be undocumented. They really would prefer to stay under the radar, and that may change given the change in our national administration. But how do you reach out to those who, you know, for the most part, want to just really stay under the radar?
So we do have an outreach coordinator, Lirio, who is working with an intern, and both of them are part of the Spanish-speaking community, and they've been doing outreach on their side, and they've also worked closely with Utah Humanities. Definitely they've been the ones kind of tackling that.
And then once, after the 26th then, I mean, what is it that you hope to have?
So after the 26th, we're definitely looking at holding larger conversations where we're interested in bringing speakers. And some of the topics that we've kind of been thinking of are things like the justice system, policing, mental health, and those kind of topics are something we want to cover in the future.
Okay. And Miriam, I mean, why is this something that the Mediation Center is doing, kind of outside of its mediation mission?
Sure. No, I think that's a great question because, I mean, not a lot of our Hispanic community really knew what mountain mediation is. And the goal for mountain mediation is basically to prevent and resolve conflict and give them the opportunity to promote a different way and transform the way that how we solve the conflict, right? So on ongoing community conversations, programs like the ones that we are having, our desire is to include people and to include everybody. And we are trying to provide a forum for sharing experiences, ideas with a more diverse community members. And one of the things you were asking is, like, you know, some people might prefer to be underground and not really be seen. But I think we have noticed that our community, specifically our Hispanic community, they feel empowered when they have an organization that kind of has their back and can teach them, you know, even though you might be undocumented, you have rights. And I think it's important for them to know. So we talk a lot about how our Latin community members are disproportionately affected by issues like housing or evictions and COVID and all of these topics in our community, but we don't always provide sufficient avenues for people directly affected to make their voices heard. So I think this is what Mountain Mediation is trying to do, and that's why we have our outreach person who speaks Spanish. So particularly with COVID, you know, the technologies like Zoom, you might be surprised that our families are struggling with. So Mountain Mediation is helping them with Spanish-speaking staff and volunteers that are reaching out to younger people so they can help their parents, grandparents get connected on Zoom. And Mountain Mediation staff is available to help anyone, English or Spanish-speaking people, so they can, they don't have boundaries to connect to our Zoom meetings and to learn what their rights are and how they can actually work it out.
All right. So again, these first two are just kind of trying to build community. You do actually hope to host some 10 conversations through the rest of the year. So another 8.
Yeah. So 10. I mean, another 8. They're going to be different topics, but you know, not only the resolution of conflict, also the restorative justice practice. So this includes victim offender conferences and family groups and conference like circles and community conferences and other similar victim center practices. So restorative justice is basically, you know, what they're trying to do is a value-based approach to a community or a building or a problem and try to solve it in a different way. I'm so sorry. So this is a system that is used in schools and the justice system and other settings to build and restore relationships. So, you know, there's been crime, but how do we resolve this in a different way that we can hear both parties and don't be so hard on each other and have a little bit of empathy on each other? So those are kind of the conversations that are going to be around for the upcoming one and try to help them to solve problems. And there's just many topics, you know, many things that mediation can solve and situations that people wouldn't not know how to use mediation. So all of these conversations are kind of going to be happening, and we're just kind of choose the topics based on the needs in the community as well.
Okay. So again, Haley, if people are interested, how can they participate here again in the one starting tomorrow and then again on the 26th?
Yeah, so we welcome everyone to be involved. So since it is going to be held on Zoom, if you go to the, our Facebook page, you can find all the information on our flyers to pre-register. And we do prefer that you pre-register, but it's definitely not required. And since these Zoom meetings are going to be held completely online, just everyone who does want to participate, just be prepared to have a computer. And also, just to add, this it is a kind of community conversation, but not every you don't if you don't feel comfortable talking or answering certain questions, you don't have to. So,
okay, all right. Anything else that you guys would like to mention?
I will probably add our phone number for people who feels more comfortable that way. And I know our Latin community members probably feel more comfortable speaking with someone directly or just going on our Facebook or our social media. So just FYI, our phone number is 435-336-0060. And again, if we have someone who speaks Spanish or English, so either one people feel more comfortable with.
All right. Miriam Garcia and Haley Locke, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much.
Well, Utah Governor Spencer Cox has declared a state of emergency ahead of expected protests at the state capitol building in Salt Lake, with the transfer of power happening in the nation's capital. Here locally, law enforcement officials are hoping for a peaceful transition but are preparing for the worst. Utah Governor Spencer Cox has asked the Utah National Guard, Utah Highway Patrol, and local police departments to stand by to intervene and protect the state capitol in case protests should turn violent. Cox's order allows authority to keep the Capitol grounds closed through Thursday, January 21st, the day after President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration in Washington, D.C. Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez tells us he couldn't believe his eyes when he saw the insurrection happening at the nation's capital earlier this month.
It was astonishing to see men and women wearing the uniform getting beat down with American flags. I never, ever thought I would see that. I understand protest and civil unrest, but to actually beat a cop with an American flag just tore at my heart, just completely ripped it out. It was a sad day for this country, for law enforcement. It's a day I'll never forget.
What he's hearing is that if there are any protests happening in Utah, they will be held at the state capitol. And while he can't predict that nothing will happen locally, because he knows anything can happen anytime, anywhere, he does believe that his team is ready and will assist the teams at the capitol if needed.
We're always on guard. We're always prepared. We've had conversations about our response. But what we're really doing is focusing on supporting the Salt Lake City and the capitol and what their needs may be.
Well, the focus is not on Summit County. He says his staff is ready for the worst.
We're definitely on our A game. We've got our head on a swivel, and we hope that there's no insurrection. We hope that people will abide by an orderly and peaceful transfer of power, and we can move this country forward.
Park City Police Chief Wade Carpenter says he hasn't heard of any planned protests in Park City, but he says they have increased staffing to deal with the Martin Luther King holiday crowds and also to make sure that the resources are in place and that the city's physical facilities are protected. There will be increased police presence at City Hall and on Main Street through the week.
Obviously, everybody is taxed right now throughout the state with resources, but we have mutual aid and lots of conversations going on right now. We'll continue to monitor this throughout the next couple of weeks and evaluate and change as needed.
But at this point, he says Park City is not providing any support for the staffing at the state capitol.
Right now, we are not. We have officers that are on standby. However, we're going to keep the majority of our resources here in the city and county. Because we're obviously, it's a very busy time for us as well with Martin Luther King weekend and the inauguration coming up. If needed, we do have resources that we can send and assist as needed, as we've done in the past with Salt Lake City.
He added that many times protests ebb and flow and move from location to location, so he'll continue to keep his finger on the pulse and make sure he is aware of what's happening as best he can. Wasatch County Sheriff Jared Grabeck did not return our request for comment. Well, the U.S. cross-country team didn't compete this past weekend, but we've got Tom Horrocks, the cross-country communications manager, on the phone with us, as well as Park City native Rosie Brennan, to talk about her best season ever. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So first, Tom, let's get an update quickly from the other teams, starting with Alpine.
Sure. Alpine had a pretty good weekend for the women. Highlights were pretty good. Michaela Schifrin was sixth in a couple of giant slaloms over the weekend, and Nina O'Brien posted a couple of career best results. So it was very promising for the women. Unfortunately for the guys, they had a doubleheader slalom in Flachau, Austria, and just missed qualifying for the top 30 there. But, of course, the Super Bowl of alpine skiing comes up this weekend with the Kitzbühel downhill, the Hahnenkamm, starting with training on Wednesday. So big weekend for alpine coming up. And also Tuesday, tomorrow, we have our alpine fundraiser coming up. It's going to be live on the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Facebook page at 9 a.m. Mountain Time. We'll have a number of guests and a number of athletes on the Facebook Live tomorrow, so jump on and support our alpine athletes. That's okay. What's happening on the alpine side.
All right. What about the freestyle teams, moguls and aerials?
Yeah, so freestyle, we had a really good weekend. Saturday, Ashley Caldwell earned her first World Cup podium of the season. She had a second-place result. And on Sunday, yesterday, Megan Nick won the individual women's. It was her first World Cup win and the first women's aerial win since 2018. And Kelly Akun was earning her first podium yesterday as well in third, and just a number of great results. And then Ashley, Justin Schoenfeld, and Eric Laughlin represented Team USA and claimed third in the mixed team event too. So a big weekend in Russia for the aerials team, and just great success for them. So happy to see them performing at the top of their game.
Okay, let's see. And then what about the freestyle and snowboard teams?
So free ski and snowboard, they are in Lax for an upcoming World Cup event, and it's a big welcome back to World Cup for Chloe Kim, the Olympic gold medalist. She's going to be back in the pipe. Of course, she spent last year at Princeton studying, but she's excited to get back in the pipe, and she'll be, I'm sure, going pretty big. It's going to be very exciting to see her return this weekend in Lax.
Okay. So, like I mentioned, you didn't have in the cross country any events this past weekend, but you do have some races coming up this weekend?
We do have races coming up this weekend. The athletes will be traveling to Scandinavia on Wednesday. They have three races coming up in Scandinavia before returning to Central Europe, and then the Nordic World Championships coming up in Oberstdorf, Germany, the end of February. So, probably want to just let Rosie talk about what she has coming up, because she's had such a phenomenal start to the season. Wearing the World Cup leader's bib, she had her first World Cup victory in Davos, Switzerland last month, and that wasn't enough. She had to follow it up the next day with her second World Cup victory, and it's just the rising tide of the U.S. cross-country team and the women specifically that have been doing so well, and we congratulate Rosie on her first two World Cups, and then adding some tremendous results from the 15th Tour de Ski, which just wrapped up last week as well. So,
okay.
Rosie,
so,
tell us about your start to the season.
Well, you're on fire, Rosie. I mean, maybe just start first, just give us a little bit of background. You were raised, of course, in Park City, but your ski team bio shows you that you actually align with Alaska?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Park City and lived there until I was 18, and then I went to college in Dartmouth, and then when I graduated there, I moved to Anchorage, Alaska, to be part of the APU Nordic Ski Center. Unfortunately, Park City does not have a Nordic Ski Club for Olympic development, so I felt that Alaska was the best place to pursue my dreams in skiing, but I do feel lucky to still have my mom living in Park City, so I spend quite a bit of time training there still, and I really feel like I get the best of both worlds between Anchorage and Park City.
Yeah, and of course you were named to the U.S. ski team several years ago and then apparently didn't get the results, and you were released, I guess, by a money-saving move by U.S. Ski and Snowboard. Is that, at that point, though, was where you really tried to kick it in gear and really start pushing yourself?
So this is actually my third stint of being on a U.S. ski team. I was on the team from 07 to 09, and then from 15 to 18, and then renamed again in 19 till now. So it's certainly been an up and down journey for me, but I think that's why being in Alaska and having the support of my club there has been so important. It's allowed me to keep consistency when those hard decisions have to be made. And it's allowed me to end up where I am now and just get the training and the time on snow that I need to be able to perform now.
Yeah. Well, so what's changed though? I mean, just a maturity, just better training. I mean, what is it that you can kind of go from being on and off a team to wearing the World Cup, you know, yellow bib?
Yeah, well, I didn't start Nordic skiing until I was 14, so I was a little bit of a latecomer. So I think it's just taking me a number of years mm-hmm. to get the number of hours of training I needed and the number of kilometers of skiing to improve my fitness and my skills. And so I've just really had to learn to be patient with myself and allow the time to, you know, get those hours and kilometers under me and be able to make the most of those. So I really think it's more or less just a time equation and maybe a good example of the many different paths it takes to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's hard to believe that you were only the second American to wear the World Cup yellow leader's bib. So, I mean, what do you think it is about cross country? Is it just here in the States? I mean, there's just more interest for young kids in alpine or freestyle than maybe the rest of the world has, like some of the powerhouses we see in cross country?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's certain hot spots for Nordic, but as a country as a whole, it's much less popular than, say, in Scandinavia and Norway and Sweden in particular. Alpine's definitely a bigger sport, but I mean, what I've seen in Park City is amazing. When I started skiing at 14, the only place I had to ski was White Pine, and that has relatively limited terrain. And you know, now I come back and there's just trails everywhere. And so I think it's a growing sport across the whole country and definitely obviously in winter destinations. And I think, you know, this maybe more awareness of fitness and also maybe being slightly cheaper than alpine skiing, it's become quite an attractive option for a lot of people. So I do think there is a growing community of Nordic skiers throughout the country.
Yeah. Again, the first World Cup victory for you came December 12th. That was in a freestyle sprint in Davos, Switzerland. Is that what's a sprint length? Is that 3, 5K?
A sprint is, that one was about 1.2 kilometers. Oh, okay. And we ski them in elimination heats. So by the end of the day, you've done that course 4 times.
Okay. So it ends up being like a 10K just done. Yeah. Really fast.
Yeah.
Is that your strength, you think, the sprints? Because, I mean, the second World Cup victory came a day later in a 10K freestyle.
Yeah, I would actually say the sprint is my weakness. I was absolutely flabbergasted to win that race. It was something I just really didn't expect at all. But I've always wanted to be, you know, an all-around skier. And I think that's one of the fun things about cross-country skiing is there are so many events, and so there's always something to be working on and improving. And so I've never counted myself out in a sprint, but that definitely wasn't my bread and butter. The next day in the 10K skate, that's 10Ks in general are probably my best event. And so that was one that I had my eyes on for quite some time. So that one was a little more of like a relief to get the victory in that. But yeah, definitely both were, I mean, it was just an incredible weekend, very rewarding.
Yeah. So is that the 10K, do you feel strong in both the freestyle, the skate style and the classic?
Yeah, it seems to switch a little bit year to year. I don't really know why. But yeah, this year my skating has been really strong and I've felt the best in that. But in past years, the classic has maybe been my preference. So yeah, I try to keep a balance and try to, you know, be the best in all of the events. I think that's what's fun about skiing.
Yeah. And certainly those first two races there, some of the powerhouse teams weren't competing early on due to COVID. I mean, did you kind of tell yourself now or never? I mean, this is, if I'm going to do it, this is when I'm going to do it.
I mean, I actually, so the 10K in Davos was a race that I had picked out, you know, back in May as one of my goal races. So I didn't really give it a second thought whether who was there or not. I think, you know, going into the season, we knew that there was going to be surprises one way or another, you know, whether it was having races, not having races, who came, who didn't come, you know, all those things. And so, yeah, I think it was more just one of those things. Like, it was a World Cup, it was a race, and I was there, and I better, you know, just do my best to make the most of the time over here in Europe, because yeah, you never know when a race is going to be canceled or yeah, when something happens. So
yeah, and as terrible as COVID has been, has it provided some kind of opportunities for folks like you? I mean, you can't go do something else. So you may as well just train, and you've got more focus, less distractions.
Yeah, certainly. That's been something that's been really interesting, especially in the summer training. You know, we didn't have any camps, and we also didn't have any access to our on snow training facilities. So that was something that I was actually worried about, not being able to get on snow during the summer months. But the plus side of that was that because we were never traveling, I was just training so consistently, just training every single day, twice a day, all summer long. No distractions, no travel, no nothing. So I think, yeah, it was kind of one of those things that's a blessing and a curse. And certainly, yeah, it was, you know, we didn't know for a long time whether we were going to have a season or not. And then I also didn't know if I felt comfortable traveling or not. So it was kind of a bumpy road for a while. But as you said, there wasn't really, it was a hard time to like pivot into something else. So it seemed to make the most sense to stay the course and try to get the most out of my training that I could.
Yeah. And I just want to talk briefly about the Tour de Ski. You finished sixth overall best, a career best for you. Give us a little bit of background to this. This is like a multi-day race.
Yeah, so it's there's eight stages in three different venues in two different countries over 10 days. So we got two rest days in that period. And the events are both sprints and distance skate and classics. So it really kind of focuses on those that are, you know, can be competitive in every event. And then kind of the kicker of the whole event is that you finish with a climb, you race up an alpine mountain. So we do like about 5K on the rolling flats and then 5K straight up a hill. And so that's kind of, you know, the end to the event that everyone always talks about.
Yeah. So you and Jesse Diggins finishing 1-2, the first for two American women, not once but twice during the Tour de Ski. Was that in the distance races that you did that?
Yeah, it was both 10K skate races, mm-hmm. which seems to be both of our strong events of the year.
Okay. And is that, I mean, was it great to have each other then to kind of push one another?
Oh, for sure. You know, it's really cool. Jesse and I have very different strengths as skiers. And so I actually think we do work off each other quite well and can use each other's strengths to help one another along. And in some of those races, you know, we were working to beat Sweden or, beat like some of the other nations. And so it's definitely more fun to do it with a teammate.
Yeah. So right now you stand in third, I believe, in the overall World Cup standings. How many more competitions do you have to maybe to try and best that?
A lot. Okay. We have two coming up this weekend and then three the following weekend and then another weekend of racing. Then we have a few weekends off. Then there's the World Championships. And then we have two more weekends of racing after the World Championships. So we're only about halfway through the season.
Yeah. Well, the best of luck to you. Your dad was so proud of you. He used to email me often to tell me about your accomplishments, and I know he'd be so proud of you now. So keep it up.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Tom, anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, that's it. Very excited. As Rosie said, we're about halfway through the season, and cross country is on the upswing, which is so great to see. And a lot of big alpine events coming up for our teams as well. So it's going to be an exciting second half to the season.
Okay, Tom Horrocks, Rosie Brennan, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
The studio now with an update from the Snyderville Basin Recreation District. I have Director Dana Jones. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, just a reminder about Rob's trail closure. This is what we've got there this winter is just about a mile or so that people can use before it gets closed under that easement agreement with Vail Resorts. Are people abiding by that closure?
You know, pretty much so. It's been a real interesting year. Everybody is really excited to get outside, of course. And we haven't had the snow that apparently they usually have here. This is my first winter, so I think I'm easing into it. So we're running into a lot more people parking in the area, a lot more people violating the Summit County ordinance for roadside parking. And we're just trying to do the best we can to, you know, educate, inform people.
Yeah. So give me a couple updates then on that, because the district had made the decision not to plow that kind of that horseshoe turn there at the entrance to Rob's Trail just to discourage use. Since there's no snow, there's parking. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, people are parking there. And like you said, they can still use the beginning of the trail there. And we are working, you know, pretty closely with Vail Resorts. And actually, we're working closely with a lot of our neighborhood HOAs and neighborhood groups. Because parking and our trailheads that are located in neighborhoods is, of course, a sensitive issue. And we want to be good partners and we want to work collaboratively with all those groups. So, yes, people are parking there, people are getting on the trails, and we're doing our best. We actually just hired an enforcement patrol individual full-time, and he's going to be out and about really trying to educate people and inform people. He does have the ability to write citations, so we recommend that you do follow the rules and the laws and the parking rules because he can write a citation, but we are really trying to focus on education and just letting people know what the rules are, what they can do, and what they can't do.
All right. So for at this point, he's just leaving warnings to people who aren't doing what they're supposed to do. I guess if you're a chronic offender, you will get a ticket, and he's keeping track of that?
Yes. Actually, we have a great program that allows him to see if he's actually given warnings in the past. If you have had a warning, you can likely expect a ticket. So I would take the warning as a good reminder that is not allowed.
So where are some of the other winter trailhead issues that you have, like Summit Park?
Summit Park is always on top of our radar. Sun Peak, I've been in the job for a month now, yeah. So I'm learning all the nuances every day. And in fact, I believe this is the first time they've let me out alone without a chaperone in public. So,
all right. Well, let's get an update on the field house status. Are you holding classes in person, or are we just still doing everything virtually?
We are actually holding some classes in person. The field house does require masks even during strenuous exercise. And we've had a lot of people ask us about that. And we have to hold our ground on that one right now, especially with the COVID numbers going up. It wouldn't really make any sense for us to lower our restrictions with the numbers going up. So we are offering some in-person classes, and we are also offering more virtual classes. So folks can get on our website. And a really exciting thing that we're also doing is we also have some free classes and free workout ideas on the website. So even if you don't have a membership, check out our website because you can find some things that you can do without actually being a member. And we're hoping to entice people to come on in and become a part of the Basin Recreation Group.
Yeah. And so do you have the other traditional wintertime activities there, like indoor soccer and the golf thing, you know, the golf training and things like that?
We do. And actually, we do have the field house is open. There are groups that are reserving it for practice, for training. We also have open field days where people can come on in. But again, masks are required for all of the above, pretty much when you walk in the door of the field house. So it's a bit of a challenge for staff sometimes because people have different ideas one way or another on that. But we really want to keep our not only our staff safe, but the patrons safe that are coming to the field house.
Okay. What have you got going on at the Willow Creek Park Pond?
Oh, that's kind of an exciting thing because this year, you know, like I said earlier, the public is really kind of flocking outdoors. They want to get out of their cooped up, out of the lockdown restrictions. And we are seeing really an unprecedented amount of people using the Willow Park Pond as a skating rink. And my staff is really working diligently this year on kind of keeping that ice ready and available for folks. They actually put up some lights around the outside so people can come in the evenings and skate. And we're seeing so many people enjoy it. And we've had a number of people really write to us, email us, and tell us how much they appreciate that opportunity this year.
So it's safe?
Yes, it is. And we do monitor it. If the minute it becomes unsafe, we would have to close it. But so far, it's looking really good. And I understand, following the weather, that there actually might be some snow coming in the forecast.
All right. And then you've got some winter programming for your what you call fun over 50. I'm guessing this is the age?
Yes. there was an email that was sent out last week that actually outlined some of the programs we have for fun over 50, everything from fat tire biking to skate skiing to hiking and walking. And there's some really good programs on that. And if you are a member, you did get the email. And if not, just come and check out our website.
Okay. How do you become a member? Is something you have to pay for?
If you want to become a member of the Field House, yes, you could get a pass. If you want to attend the classes, you can just come on in and register for them that way.
Okay. And then you've also got some spring programming online?
The youth spring programs are going to be coming out online, yes. So folks can kind of look for that, start registering their kids for some of the youth programs. We are planning on running them this year. Crossing our fingers that everything's going to be okay with that.
Okay. And again, that's all on the website?
Yes, it is.
All right. And then in terms of what you got scheduled for the year in terms of capital projects, what's being planned there?
One thing we have coming up that's kind of exciting is the Amenti project, where we're going to be putting park fields and right near Trailside Park there. We're going to be a couple more fields in there, restrooms, some pavilions, some walking trails. And we're currently working on that. We're getting together the final drawings so we can put it out to bid to be built. So we're hoping that 2021 is going to be the year when we see that park get built.
And then what about the park area at Silver Creek Village?
You know, that's kind of a little bit further out that we're not really kind of taking a look at that at this time. But we are looking at everything, you know, how far out we're going to have to go with that. That's probably a 5 to 10 year project when that comes out. But there's been a lot of ideas. I've seen a lot of drawings and heard a lot of ideas for the amenities that we'll be able to provide in that area.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Actually, I would like to mention that today we're going to be doing some alpine burning of the piles just near in Summit Park. There is the Summit Park Forest Health and Fuels Reduction Program that we did, which actually staff got a Wildfire Mitigation Award for that. It's a national award. I think there's only 3 awarded in the entire nation. And that project actually got an award. But today they're going to be starting a controlled burn of some of the slash piles there, and it's right near Parkview Drive Trailhead. So the area will remain open, so you can go up there and hike, but we're asking the public to please not call 911 for that. That is a controlled burn, and our provider is working on that.
Okay. Dana, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, 350 Utah Army National Guard troops will be in Washington, D.C. for the presidential inauguration this week. KPCW's Carolyn Murray spoke with Summit County Manager and Utah Army National Guard Brigadier General Tom Fisher. She has this report.
Brigadier General Tom Fisher says the Utah National Guard troops will be assisting in command and control efforts under the direction of the Washington, D.C. National Guard.
you know, everything from movement of people or guard members and missions to controlling airspace and all of those types of things that are part of one of these very important inaugural events.
Fisher says providing security for the United States presidential inaugurations isn't new.
So as I learned in the last day, every inauguration, including George Washington's first inauguration, have included National Guard members.
Fisher says this inaugural event is different, and he explains that the Utah troops being deployed will have a history of working together. Due to COVID-19 and the recent security threats, officials say it will be like no other inauguration in U.S. history.
This one seems to be different than some of the past, but I'm sure there have been security situations that have been sensitive in the past. But in this case, you know, we're sending a cohesive unit that is used to working together. They also, as they are getting ready to board planes to get to Washington, D.C., they're receiving briefings that tells them everything about the situation they're going into, the mission, who they will be supporting, as well as anything that we know or that intelligence sources know about what they might be facing.
On Thursday, Utah Governor Spencer Cox declared a state of emergency in anticipation of potential unrest at the state capitol in the coming days. Fisher says he is ready to deploy at a moment's notice.
You know, I have a role in that I have to keep up with all the information that's going on and the different types of preparations that the National Guard might be making in support of local law enforcement and in support of local government and under the governor's orders. It is unlikely that I would get called forward to be in any kind of direct support role in that. But as always, as with any private or sergeant in the National Guard that does get that call to support the governor's effort, I always have a backpack ready as well.
Fisher says the National Guard service members are a remarkable group of citizens who epitomize the motto, always ready, always there.
They are willing to drop the proverbial plowshare or their civilian work and their family and be part of a group of people that will go to the National Capital Region to support law enforcement or will answer the governor's call to help law enforcement in Utah to do their job and expand their capabilities. So very grateful for their service and their willingness to support the Constitution under their oath.
That's Summit County Manager and Land Component Commander for the Utah Army National Guard, Brigadier General Tom Fisher. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.